You're listening to the Nomcast, a proud member of Forgotten Entertainment. Hello, and welcome to the Nomcast, the Netflix original movie podcast. I am your host, Andrew Morgan. You can follow the show at NomcastPod on Twitter and Instagram, and you can check us out on the web at NomcastPod.com. All right, big show today, lots to cover. Later on in the show, I will bring on Chris Frodell of Arguing With Myself to cover two action films that came out recently, Jason Momoa's Sweet Girl, which just came out over the weekend, and Beckett, the more conspiracy thriller starring John David Washington that came out the week before. So we're going to cover both of those for you guys and kind of go over the action film year so far as well, because a long time ago, we had done an episode back in January, I believe, where we said, you know, like kind of like seven or eight films that, you know, really piqued our interest. And I'd say I think five have now come out, and we kind of go over all that and how we kind of feel about that is the big picture with only a few action films left in the year. So stay tuned for that. But I wanted to start up top with a huge, huge news story that came out yesterday on Monday. 42, yes, 42 Netflix original film release dates were announced. And a lot of it, I noticed, kind of dovetailed nicely with last week's episode where we brought on also Mike of Mike and Oscar and kind of went over, you know, the Netflix award season update, you know, kind of see who was the big three films that they want to take to the dance. You know, in previous years, you had The Irishman, Marriage Story, Two Popes. In 2020, it was Mank, Chicago 7, Ma Rainey. So they always have kind of like these three prominent films that get most of the attention, and then there's other stuff that might get some attention, but you can kind of tell by the release dates what they think of these films. Now, last year, Chicago 7 was a little bit different because they had to put that out before the election, so that came out back in October, I believe, before, you know, which is a little early for a serious Oscar contender. October's a little early. Usually ends, they usually be like late November, December is where most of these end up landing. You know, last year was a weird year, and that case was a particularly weird case. But Mank, I know it came out a little bit later than that. I believe that was the first week of December, if I remember correctly. Ma Rainey was like a couple weeks after that. So that's a typical thing. I remember The Irishman was around Thanksgiving the year before. And Marriage Story was close to that. And The Two Popes came out, I believe, right at the telltale end of December, if not like the first week of January. I think it was at the telltale end of December. So, you know, some of these positions mean a whole lot. And yesterday when they dropped all these original film release dates, you can kind of see where their strategy is heading. We listed so many of these films last week, so I definitely, if you didn't listen to that episode, go back and listen to that. There's tons of information there. But to kind of recap, the big three that we thought going forward was The Power of the Dog, Don't Look Up, and probably Tick, Tick, Boom as the number three position. Tick, Tick, Boom, we already knew, had kind of a mid-November release date that still holds water. You know, it's right there. It's in that contention area. Not anything to worry about. Don't Look Up, they put out the release date as part of this. Christmas Eve is the release date for that, with a limited release for theaters 2 weeks before that, on the 10th of December. So that's a great position. That holds a lot of power right at the end of the year. You know, The Power of the Dog, we talked about that one a lot, might be their kind of number one if they were choosing right now. That's going to come out December 1st with a limited run in theaters 2 weeks ahead of time on the 17th of November. So that's, you know, again, solid position. That's kind of the Mank position from last year. So it means a lot to Netflix to put it in that position. And So, but there were some other films that we were kind of, you know, wondering where Netflix kind of put the hierarchy on some of these other awards films. The Starling was one of those where we thought maybe that can jump up and take one of those positions if one of those movies didn't really work out. And The Starling just got its release date and had a trailer released today. It is coming out on Netflix September 24th and in select theaters the week before on 9/17. And to me, that is a bit tough if you're thinking of this as a big time awards film. I don't know, again, if they thought they had to do this because it's going to be going to the Toronto International Film Festival and they wanted to make it close to that, or how they wanted to really divvy up the schedule here. But that, I mean, let's put it this way. I saw the trailer. I was tearing up watching the trailer. So if the movie is anywhere near as good as the trailer or as effective as the trailer was on me today, this movie is going to be excellent. Excellent. So it's tough to see it in this position, quite frankly. I'm glad to see such a good movie come, you know, in a month's time. But it did kind of knock me back a little bit that I was like, oh, maybe this isn't the kind of priority that Netflix thinks it is. Maybe it'll shock everybody, but it's a very interesting release date. Another interesting release date from one of these other kind of peripheral contenders that we were thinking, The Guilty, which also is going to the Toronto International Film Festival, comes out the week after The Starling on October 1st, which an October release date for a movie like this makes a lot of sense because it's kind of a thriller, more of like a crime thriller. So you could put that in a month like October where you're kind of in the midst of this thriller horror onslaught that is going to come through. We'll get to that in a minute because Netflix also released all the October Halloween films. So I can go over those after the award stuff. But The Guilty gets this 10/1 release date and a limited theater run for a week beforehand. So that comes out on September 24th in theaters before the release on Netflix. So to me, this kind of means that they might think it's very good, but I don't know if they consider it an awards film, or at least not a Best Picture awards film. It's still in a pretty good spot. I mean, the fall is still chock full of these things, but 10/1, not in that kind of like power last 5-6 weeks of the year where you traditionally see these. Another one that we talked about was Passing, which was the one they acquired out of Sundance, which made a good amount of noise for that acquisition. That is now coming out November 10th, with a release date in theaters 2 weeks beforehand, starting on October 27th. Now, if you're starting to pick some of this up, and I'll toss in another couple here in a minute, but if you're starting to notice some of the ones that I'm kind of like, I don't know if they consider it maybe a big awards contender, you're seeing also these in select theaters runs. The windows are shorter for the ones that I think they maybe don't consider as awards worthy than some of these other ones. So just to kind of cross compare. So The Starling gets a week in theaters. The Guilty gets a week in theaters. Passing, The Power of the Dog, Don't Look Up, all get 2 weeks. So that's a little bit more favorable. The Unforgivable, which we laughed about, was up until this point called the Untitled Nora Fingscheidt Project, because that is the director of note on that one, but it is now called The Unforgivable. This is a movie starring Sandra Bullock and Viola Davis, and that is now coming out December 10th with a two-week limited run in theaters. So that now has a very powerful position if you're talking about, is this an awards worthy film? And obviously a lot of people love Sandra Bullock and Viola Davis. Tons of nominations and awards come from that. And, you know, just obviously a popularity thing with Sandra Bullock on Netflix specifically, you know, with Bird Box. So a lot of things to look at here. And Lost Daughter also gets a 2 week run in theaters before its release date, which we mentioned on that podcast of New Year's Eve, 12/31, for that one. There's also a couple of international award films contenders, Seven Prisoners and The Hand of God, which we mentioned both of them on that episode. Seven Prisoners is coming out in November with a limited run in theaters, and The Hand of God is getting a limited run in theaters for a couple weeks before it comes out on December 15th. So again, great positioning for all of those. So if you're trying to read the tea leaves here, maybe they think, you know, it's so crowded that they had to kick things like The Starling and The Guilty to a different time besides those last 5-6 weeks, where you're going to see Passing, Tick, Tick, Boom, Power of the Dog, The Unforgivable, Don't Look Up, and Lost Daughter, as well as the international films. But it does kind of look, with the fact that it's only in select theaters for a week versus 2 weeks, that maybe they are giving a little less power to those than they are some of these other ones. So I thought that was interesting, something to pass along. We'll see if that holds water as we get into award season. Something also to mention, Back to the Outback, the animated feature, one of the last ones to kind of come out towards the end of the year here for Netflix, is coming out in December. So that could also be a power move for them, where they're trying to keep it till the very end to kind of be, you know, in a position where they're like, this might be the biggest thing that they have, which is amazing considering Mitchell's versus the Machines did so well, and looks like that one's going to probably contend come Oscar season, award season coming forward. So it'd be interesting if this is the second one that they're kind of like, forget Vivo, forget Wish Dragon, those were fun, but Back to the Outback is the goods here. So that would be interesting to see if that comes true as well. Some of the other release dates, I mean, they definitely jammed this thing up. Like I said, 42 films. They released all the kind of October Halloween films. A lot of the ones that, you know, we previewed with Larry Dwyer back around March or April, when Things Seen and Heard, I believe it was the title of that film back then. We did kind of like a larger look at the horror slate coming up, you know, where we previewed Fear Street and all the things that have come out thus far, and then a lot of the stuff that we thought was going to be held to the October dates. So things like No One Gets Out Alive, There's Someone Inside Your House, have the beginning of the month, Night Teeth, a vampire film coming out in the middle, Army of Thieves, the prequel to The Army of the Dead, starring the Dieter character and directed by that same actor, coming out right before Halloween on 10/29. They also have Night Books, which is more of like a family thing that comes out back in mid-September. So a little out of the zone, but something that definitely will be out in time if you wanted to revisit it during the October Halloween period. There's also Hypnotic, which comes out in October, and Fever Dream, which is a Spanish language one that looks very promising, that is actually going to have a limited run in theaters and you know, be on Netflix in October for the October Halloween period. So a lot of stuff there to chew on. A lot of those we did preview in that episode, so I definitely say, if you want to go back and check out that episode I did with Larry, so much information there. So check that one out. But I also wanted to kind of go over noticeably absent films. There's been a few films that over the span of the year have been pushed to 2022, notably like Blonde, the Marilyn Monroe biopic, you know, that got pushed. Wendell and Wild, this animated project with Key and Peele, was moved back to 2022. Apollo 10 and a Half, the Richard Linklater movie, got pushed to 2022. There was a bunch of titles that have kind of come and gone and kind of like, yeah, we thought this might be here, but they got moved. Totally makes sense. There's so many movies, obviously, but there were three movies in particular that I thought was interesting that they were left out, starting with one that was right there in the sweet spot of the early January sizzle reel that came out, that Netflix did to show what they were releasing in 2021, Escape from Spiderhead, which we actually mention later on in this episode when we're talking about the action film year. This is a movie with, you know, one of the biggest action stars in Chris Hemsworth. It's like a futuristic sci-fi thriller, crime thriller, sort of dealing with, you know, prisoners being escaped and being experimented on and all kinds of stuff. It's currently listed in post-production They showed a clip, like I said, in that January sizzle reel. Journey Smollett was cited in an interview. She's in the film. This was, you know, recently, this month. She was saying she's excited for the film. She loved doing it, called the director a visionary, but she said she had not yet seen the film. So I would assume that it's still in progress, but you know, we are here at the end of August, so it might be one of those where they try to sneak it in maybe towards the end of the year in like November, December, and kind of announce it last minute. But it's kind of interesting. I thought this was a film that was wrapped up shooting-wise in 2020, so I don't know why it would still be in post-production, but you never know. I mean, you know, COVID alone has messed with a lot of things, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. It looked pretty interesting. I definitely love me a Hemsworth or two. This one only has one. But I would definitely look forward to that. I hope it ends up coming out, but I wouldn't be shocked if they use it for something like a January or February season that is notoriously slower, or maybe they'll hold it for next summer because maybe they don't think they have a ton on the docket at this point outside of, say, maybe The Gray Man or something of that nature. Another movie that was mentioned on this podcast just last week, Beauty, which I mentioned as kind of maybe this sleeper indie stuff that might work on, you know, being in the Gotham Awards or the Indie Spirit, something smaller, because it seems like a movie that would fit that kind of category, like a 40-year-old version from last year or the half of it or something like that. And it's listed as completed on IMDb. This movie stars Sharon Stone, Giancarlo Esposito, Niecy Nash, the rapper Joey Badass, and Grace Marie Bradley as Beauty herself. It's about a gifted young black woman who struggles to maintain her voice and identity after she's offered a lucrative recording contract. And to me, this seems like if this didn't get a release date, it's this late in the year, they have so many other awards films. My guess, this goes to Sundance this year, and then they try to get some buzz and maybe release it probably shortly thereafter, maybe in a February, March kind of time period after they see what people thought of it there, get it a little bit of a notoriety, and then kind of push it onto the platform from there. I could definitely see that happening. It seems like something that Netflix has done in the past, so I can see that being like a staging area to get it some buzz before it goes forward in the rest of the year. So I could see early 2022 for that film. Another one I've been kind of keeping my eye on, Metal Lords, which is part of the Benioff and Weiss, the guys who made Game of Thrones, their overall deal. This is written by D.B. Weiss and, you know, produced by both of them. This is directed by Peter Sellett, who did Raising Victor Vargas and Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. And it's an interesting film. It's kind of like, it sounds like a small town heavy metal version of School of Rock, maybe with a more of a focus on the kids. It's two friends try to form a heavy metal band with a cellist for the battle of the bands. Sounds very, you know, basic, but it is like very music heavy from what I understand. Tom Morello, the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine and Audioslave, is the music producer. He's in charge of the music for this film. So a lot of it was like cool stuff that I was looking forward to. Nothing listed for this one. So I can see maybe this one getting pushed as well to maybe an early part of next year and see where that goes. Because it sounds like a lot of fun, though. I really wanted to check this out, but it is one of those that I was like, oh, I haven't heard about anything for that in a while. And the fact that it doesn't have a release date in a day where they release 42 of them. Yeah, that seems to stick out. And of course, guys, they released a lot of the release dates for all of the Christmas films as well. Don't worry. This time last year, I believe we did our first Christmas preview episode, which might be coming soon, especially with how packed the rest of the year kind of is. I don't know where we're going to fit all these things in, so might be coming up with a preview episode for that soon with our traditional elves that we've had on in the past, comic book writer Travis Holyfield, my buddy there, comedian Mega Harrison, and of course Kid Christmas himself, Chad Dizzle Davis, podcaster Chad Dizzle Davis, who him and Mega did Christmas Purgatory is like a short-lived podcast that they did about Christmas TV episodes and movies and stuff. They're really into it, and we always have a lot of fun with those. So look out for that coming soon. But it's one of those things. They have like, you know, six or seven prominent stuff. Like, I know there's a Shaun the Sheep Christmas thing, and another Princess Switch movie, and I think Cary Elwes is in like a rom-com with Brooke Shields or something for that. There's a bunch of good options, fun options that we'll go over probably in an episode coming up soon. But yeah, it was a big day in terms of what Netflix is looking forward to for the rest of the year, what they're gonna try to, you know, show out. But man, they really seem to have the power positions laid out for award season, and you know, hopefully the holiday seasons of Halloween and Christmas are a lot of fun this year too. But all I see, man, as a Netflix film podcaster, I am exhausted looking at this list. 42 movies from September all the way through the end of the year. Yikes. How the hell are we going to fit all this in, guys? So tell me, you know, hit us up on social media. Let us know what you're looking forward to the most, what we should prioritize on, you know, if there's anything where you're just like, oh, I don't care. You can keep that out if you want. Any of your opinions, I will take them all. So, you know, be sure to contact us and kind of chime in, get involved in the conversation about what you want to see, what you hope is good. Did you like the Starling trailer? Because like I said, I was openly weeping by myself in my basement. It sounds very creepy when I lay it out like that, but I swear it's a finished one. It's very nice. But talk to me, guys. Come and share your time with me. But a moment that I had not by myself, hanging out with my buddy Chris Riddell of Arguing With Myself, that is what is coming up next. We will review Sweet Girl and Beckett, two conspiracy action thrillers that came out in the last couple weeks. So stay tuned for that. Right after this break.
Do you like beer?
Do you like podcasts?
Do you like beer podcasts?
Then check out Crackin' One Open, a podcast about brews, news, and pop culture reviews.
Every week, we crack open a new craft beer from breweries around the country.
And sometimes the world.
We'll talk about how it was made, what's in it, the history of the brew, and the brewery.
Then we'll give our tasting notes, and while we're finishing up, we'll talk about some of the latest goings-on in the world of pop culture.
So check out Crackin' One Open with Mike and Elise, part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Hey there, I'm Mr. Black.
And I'm Mr. Green, and we're a couple of guys who met in a comic book store.
Together we host the Pint O' Comics podcast, where we invite listeners to join us to talk about movies, TV, comics, music, or just whatever.
Starting very soon, we'll be joining up with the fine folks at Forgotten Entertainment for a special limited series called On the QT, where we talk Tarantino.
Every week for 10 weeks, a guest will join us to chat about every Quentin Tarantino movie, from Reservoir Dogs to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So join us starting in May 2021.
On the QT is available wherever you download your podcasts and is part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
All right. Glad to have this man back. Been a while, my man. Chris Riddell of Arguing With Myself. I know, man. It has. I'm glad to have you here. You know, we've done a lot of action pictures in the past.
I believe so.
I believe you are attuned to this genre quite well. You know, also being called Mr. Marvel in the past and everything else, a moniker that you're not too fond of, but definitely, you know, kind of fits the bill. You like a good actioner. You like a good film in that regard. So I figure I'd bring you on, we're going to review a couple of action films today.
Yeah.
We're going to do Sweet Girl with Jason Momoa and Beckett with John David Washington. But we were kind of talking off air. I kind of wanted to like set the table a little bit, like where I was coming into these last couple of weeks where, you know, it's the dog days of August. I get it. You know, we're all just trying to, you know, fill out the rosters. But there's been a few decent movies out in August where you're like, oh, The Suicide Squad is really good on HBO Max, or, you know, whatever you got going on. It's kind of come back into form. So maybe August won't be so bad because it's a weird year.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking like, God, but so Netflix set up like this whole action film slate that they kind of laid it all out in that big sizzle reel early on. And We did this whole episode of action films that we were looking forward to in 2021 back in January. And in that episode, we had 8 films that piqued our interest for the months to come. And since then, 5 of those, Chris, have actually come out now, with Sweet Girl being the 5th.
Yeah.
And the first 4 are Outside the Wire, Thunder Force, Army of the Dead, and The Last Mercenary with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I gotta say, Chris, pretty underwhelmed with that slate. And all of those, I was excited for at least one reason or another, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have Outside the Wire, where it's Anthony Mackie hot with the Falcon and Winter Soldier stuff.
Yep.
You think, all right, let's give him a chance. Movie's not very good. Thunder Force, you know, it's like, all right, well, Melissa McCarthy, Octavia Spencer, 2 actresses that I like. Nope. The movie's complete trash. If anything I like on there was Jason Bateman stuff, and it's very short-lived. Otherwise, complete trash.
Yep.
And then Army of the Dead, varying degrees of success. I thought of all the movies, this was the only one that I was kind of like giving a slight passing grade. There were things I liked about it, looking forward to maybe more stuff in the future. But all in all, still kind of eh. And then Last Mercenary, JCVD, I thought I can have fun with it. It's not a good movie. So it's tough. So that brings us to today. Now, again, you know, there are other action films that came out besides those, you know, Gunpowder Milkshake being one of my favorites of the year. And that's a good film. And, you know, stuff like The Ice Road came out. That's pretty good. It's not going to, you know, blow too much smoke. What? I don't even know my metaphors anymore. It's not going to do that much for you. Let's put it that way. It's pretty good. It'll pass the time.
It's not going to blow that horn.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, exactly. So this is why we're catching up to now, where it's like, okay, man, we only got a couple of these left in the year. You know, today, like I said, we're going to talk about Sweet Girl and Beckett, which came out recently in the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
And then, you know, the only thing really looking forward is Kate comes out in a few weeks, the Mary Elizabeth Winstead, kind of a 24-hour assassin thing going on.
Yep.
And then, you know, Red Notice is their big ticket thing, which I believe just had its release date put out for November. And Escape from Spiderhead still hasn't, I think, have a release date yet, but that's the Chris Hemsworth one that they showed him on a speedboat, this kind of like cool image stuff, Miami Vice, whatever looking stuff, in their sizzle reel. So there's still a few left, but overall, yikes, not feeling too good. So again, leads us into today. So today we're going to talk about Beckett and Sweet Girl. Yeah. I want to start with Sweet Girl, okay? Because this one, you figure Jason Momoa is action, right? Like that was part of the thing about these films for this year. Big time action stars, Anthony Mackie, Jason Momoa, Chris Hemsworth, The Rock, you know, Gal Gadot, you know, people like that, that you're just like, yes, Batista, etc. You're like, okay, awesome. Star driven action films with people who know what to do. So when I'm going into this movie, what is the basic criteria? It's like, okay, I want enough of a script and Jason Momoa to beat the hell out of people, right? That's all we really want. And even I said to my wife, like, I was like, what would you think are like the basics of what I need from this movie? And she's like, Jason Momoa to be topless? There's not even that. So it's an odd movie. And, you know, one of these things where, you know, you're going into it. And I think Momoa, I root for him. Aquaman, I wasn't that big a fan. I liked him in Game of Thrones. You know, I hear Frontier, the Netflix show, is very good. He's going to be in Dune, which we were talking off air.
No.
You know, it could be huge. But, you know, I like him. I like his look. I like his persona, all this stuff. And yet, I couldn't do a lot with this film. I mean, it's, you know, a simple plot of a devastated husband vowing to bring justice to the people responsible for his wife's death, while protecting the only family he has left, his daughter. Oh, by the way, we're going to spoil the shit out of these movies, by the way. That is not really the plot of this movie at the end of the day. So, because there's a big twist that we will get to in a minute. But, man, I was underwhelmed by this. It's a debut, directing by Brian Andrew Mendoza, who was a producer on Frontier, as we mentioned, from Jason Momoa. It's written by Greg Hurwitz and Philip Eisner. Are you familiar with Hurwitz? You're a big comic book guy. He's a comic book writer.
You know what? I looked that up and I was just like, what has he done? And I guess he's written for The Punisher and Wolverine on the DC end, Batman.
And Dark Knight, yeah. He did Moon Knight for a while. He actually wrote the screenplay for The Book of Henry, if you ever saw that movie, too.
Yes, I didn't, but I also didn't hear good things about The Book of Henry.
Yeah, me neither. I heard, or at least middling things. I don't want to you know, speculate too hard for a movie I haven't seen.
Right.
But a movie I did see is the other writer, you know, Eisner here, where he wrote Event Horizon, which has actually gotten some buzz that they might either redo or turn into a series, which I actually like that movie. That and Dark City are like the two that always like are synonymous in my head. And they always, and they kind of you know, also have rumors of both of them kind of looking to do new projects, I guess, or new revival projects with those. He also wrote Mutant Chronicles, if you ever saw that. That was
I didn't.
Thomas
I always
Jane.
Saw
Yeah.
Always saw advertisements like, to me, it looked, for it.
Yeah, it to me, it never looked good. So I was just like, I'll stay away. But this movie, Sweet Girl, was on the radar, wanted to see this movie. But again, I should have seen, you know, kind of the red flags in that, right? So a feature film debut, writers who I've had middling kind of, you know, interest in. And I'll tell you this before we get into like the scores and stuff. The movie starts with Momoa saying the line, "It wasn't supposed to be like this," and then he jumps into the river.
Yes.
That's how I felt at the end of this movie, and I think I'm not alone, because the current scores right now, 5.5 on IMDb, 46 Metascore, 21% tomato meter, 45% audience score, and a 2.3 on Letterboxd, which I was actually, that's kind of high. Actually being pretty kind for the movie head. So I know, you know, maybe you didn't have as much going in. I just had to kind of dump out all that on you. I'm sorry. Like, no. it's a long runway for me when you're doing a show like this to bring it all here. So this was like kind of like these last two movies we're talking about are like the last ditch efforts of like the summer blockbustery feeling stuff.
Yeah.
And I was incredibly underwhelmed. Where, how did you come into this film and where do you sit with it?
So, you know, like always, once the boss says, "Hey, I need you to watch these films," that's when they get on my radar. You know, as I'm online, I see, you know, advertisements about Sweet Girl, where they're promoting the fact that Jason Momoa is starring. So, you know, it's just like, you know, little blurbs of like, "Oh my God, he's so hot." That's it. And I'm like, this is their advertising for it?
Yeah.
Trying to decide if I was going to see this or Beckett first. My wife and I, we ended up watching the trailers. And I when Sweet Girl came on, I'm like, okay, it's an actioner. All right. Okay. Didn't really get a sense of what it was about by the trailer. Like, it wasn't blaring. It wasn't like, you know, okay, I know his wife is sick. I didn't know if she was going to survive, if he was going to find the cure before the end of the film, whatever.
Sure.
So I kind of went into it cold. But some of the, as you call them, red flags come up. I'm like, none of this makes sense. Like, this is, like, right off the bat. And I'm just like, I start going into my phone. I start looking at the IMDb score. I see the 5.5 and I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, what
Once
am I getting
start
into?
Second screening, it's bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And I felt like definitely after act one, I started to be like, where are we going here?
Yeah.
And because I don't know if you listened to my podcast, but I don't
of
know
course.
If you remember when we previewed this movie,
yep.
I was just like, Jason Momoa is going to punch Big Pharma in the face.
Yep.
That's what I thought. It was like just going to be this revenge thing,
him
trying to get justice. But to be honest, like, I don't really see Momoa being the guy I want for that type of film. Like, because it feels like it adds more of a conspiracy thriller thing. That's why it actually makes a decent double feature if they were good. We'll get there. You know, for Beckett and Sweet Girl,
yeah,
it actually makes kind of sense because it's kind of these, you know, conspiracy thriller types. But man, yeah, this one, I don't know if I want Jason Momoa to do that, because it actually, both films, it feels like these movies that could have been like a George Clooney type in The American, like that movie
right.
that came out
yep.
years ago. Or The American, or The Quiet American, whatever the hell
it's
called.
I think it's The American. The American, where he's a sniper.
Yeah, right. Yeah, where, and he's overseas. Where yeah. that one, you know, these type of kids are like Robert Redford did a bunch in the 70s. And,
yep.
You know, like, but again, like these handsome kind of leading guys where they're not like actioner, like jack dudes. They're right. just guys who you could be like.
Average
yeah,
Joe.
Like Harrison Ford. Like The Fugitive, like yes. those type of things. This easily could have been a comp for, was not to be.
No, it just seemed like almost like a comedic sketch of Jason Momoa trying to be an every guy.
Yeah, especially that scene in the hospital after his wife dies.
Oh my God.
I was like, one, you're lingering on this way too long.
Yeah.
And he is trying his heart out. And I didn't think it was that bad, but Jesus,
yeah.
did you need to pull back from that? Because that is not what we're here for at all.
It's part of my Oscar reel.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Calm down.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, like, there's so many problems, and we'll get to the twist, which I think the twist, I mean, really punches you in the face. Because, Chris, I will tell you, bros are having a terrible month, right?
Yeah.
First, they watch He-Man and watch him get dispatched so Teela can rise up.
Yeah.
And now they get a Jason Momoa action movie that turns into a Dora the Explorer gone rogue movie at the end.
Yeah.
It's a odd twist to have the daughter be the person who is actually doing this, but Jason Momoa is who we see doing it. It is puzzling, it is unnecessary, and that's just part of the stuff that I felt just didn't fit.
And I know, you know, we're kind of all over the map on this, but it deserves it.
It does.
So at the end, when they're chasing him, or what we perceive to be him, they're saying him, he, there, go around the corner. They're not
sure
in like any, they're being specific. They're saying he went this way.
Sure.
And if it's really her, if it's really her psyche this whole time, then wouldn't they be like, they went this way, or, you know, not alluding to the fact that it's he or she.
Right.
You know, but they were going after him.
Yeah. Like, to me, it's like, this isn't Fight Club, where right. like, you know, where we're seeing kind of this dual personality where, you know, he's kind of even talking to himself and everything else.
Yeah.
Like, we don't see any scenes where, like, you see her where they put her where Momoa is in a bunch of scenes,
yeah.
but we don't put, like, her talking to, like, a person at the end of a tunnel where right. no one is. Like, there, I don't get how they set this up. And not only that, here's my biggest problem with that, and then we'll kind of like do the dance from there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so for anyone who saw it, you know, you obviously kind of know the way this kind of ramps up. So the wife is dying, Momoa is, you know, and the daughter are watching her die, you know, and then they get a little bit of hope with a generic drug that they can afford versus the drug that they can't.
Right.
And then suddenly the big pharma guys are like, nope, we're going to take that off the market. We're going to shatter all your expectations of your wife, you know, being to be treated affordably and everything else. And then Momoa promises to kill basically this guy who was the big pharma guy, does it on like a CNN or Fox News type show.
Can I add something to that?
Sure. Sure.
If you or I called into CNN.
Oh yeah. There's people at your door.
To kill someone with your bare hands. I'm
yes.
like, why didn't that happen?
Yeah.
Where are the authorities?
Even if it's like, okay, they thought I was just being emotional.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I'm sure. Somebody's still coming to talk to you.
Yeah.
Somebody's still coming to make sure you're not making a bomb or something like that.
Did you say
you were on a watch
Ray
list?
We'll yeah. be right over.
Exactly. Yeah. And used your real name.
Yeah.
Like, didn't do an alias, didn't do anything.
No.
So there's that. So then the wife dies, and obviously he's seeking vengeance. And this goes in two stages. So 6 months after the wife dies, he's still hung up and he gets a, I'm trying to remember now. Yeah. So like, cause there was a stage where like a reporter from Vice reaches out to him saying that this is a bigger conspiracy than it, you even know. Yep. And so, but then there's an assassin that kills that guy. And then, takes on Jason Momoa in the train. The daughter's in the train too, because she followed him, and she gets hurt too. And they're both, the way that scene ends, where it's like, okay, Momoa's on the ground, but he just got thrown through a window onto a platform, and the daughter is there. They're both lying on the ground.
Yeah.
Fade to black. Then it goes 2 years later, where now Momoa, in air quotes, is now kind of in more conspiracy mode. He's like, that reporter was right. This goes all these places. And he's trying to put the pieces together. And, you know, it turns into another attempt on the big pharmaceutical guy's life. And which I knew there was a red flag when Jason Momoa, this giant guy, walks into the back of this place, takes a catering uniform right off the rack, and is like, yep, this is going to fit me.
Exactly.
Because, like, Jason Momoa, the giant muscle-bound guy, it's like it fits like a goddamn glove. If anybody has ever worked in restaurants or any kind of, like, retail job where they give you those pants that, like, don't even have belt loops, you know, like you're the basic hired help, wear black pants and get through the day thing. No, none of that stuff fits you like a glove. It fits you like a box, you know, it's not forming. It's not, you know, sexy. And this guy's rolling up looking straight up GQ for a caterer's uniform.
I'm sorry. That event is high security. You're not going to just sneak in, take something off the rack, change into it, and be able to do whatever the hell you want.
So this is where the part in the movie where I go, okay, I understand he's Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
But we know nothing about him as, like, you know, he's trained for combat, he's ex-military. No, none of that exists.
I thought I missed
he's
the dialogue.
He's just a guy. Nope.
Nah.
And so the whole time I'm going,
he goes to the gym.
You know, right. Yeah, he goes to a boxing gym. Awesome. But at this stage, this is where he's dead. And this is actually Rachel doing all this.
Yes.
So when you backtrack, it's like, okay, well, at least Rachel makes a little bit of sense because we get exposition dumps later with the useless FBI agents where they have phone conversations where it's like she's rooting her on.
Right.
But also being like, here's your resume. And it's like you're a junior judo Olympic, whatever, and all this. It's like, okay, that still doesn't make you a spy. It doesn't make you that, like, clever to get in on security team details, dispatching all these guys for, like, you know, this billionaires.
Yeah.
It doesn't work out that way.
Nope.
So it already didn't make sense with Jason Momoa. The fact that we find out it's Rachel makes, like, an ounce more sense, but still is incomprehensible. And then you're on this ride the whole time where you're like, yeah, Jason Momoa, badass, like, doing all this stuff, whatever. At least you can enjoy the fight scenes. But once you know it's Rachel at the end, I don't know if you had this kind of, you know, thought. I was like, only thing that is aided by Rachel being the predominant fighter chaser is what I said, where it's like, you know, you get a little bit that she's an honor student who competed in, you know, junior Olympic judo or whatever. Yeah. But there's a real problem when you're like, okay, you're making a movie that you're pitching as a Momoa movie.
Yeah.
Okay. And then at the very end, you're like, no, 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 that wasn't Momoa doing all that. That was this girl.
Yep.
Okay. And then she gets to carry the last 20 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That doesn't work because you're basically being like, I signed up for a Momoa movie.
Yeah.
And also it doesn't work because you're like, you know, I've watched this guy doing all this work, putting his heart and soul into this. And now I have to see him just go away.
Yeah.
That is a terrible decision. And then on top of that, if we're sitting here, we're in a summer, we're actually in the last year or two, where like big time action films starring females kicking ass is like a thing now.
Yeah.
There's so many of them. And there's a lot of good ones too. I mentioned one, Gunpowder Milkshake, that I just saw recently. This could have been a movie where they had Momoa die when he died, and then it's her movie from there on out.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's not what they pitch, and you don't get Jason Momoa to do part of a movie. You know, and also bros would be even more angry if they're like, wait, Momoa's only here for what, 30 minutes?
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, they would lose their minds. So to me, I just think Momoa is just completely miscast if this is what you want to do. And also, it doesn't make sense to pull the ripcord on the whole Momoa experience here and put her in the driver's seat because it doesn't serve anything.
Yeah. I have two comments. One, you could say that would explain how these people that were attacking Momoa had like the upper hand for most of the fights.
Right.
Like it wasn't just Jason Momoa winning after one punch or one, you know, chop to the neck or whatever. You're sure. Like, why is this guy not dispatching these assassins? And right. Then you find out it's like, oh, that was Rachel the whole time. But prior to that, being on the train, I'm like, why is he getting his ass whooped?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it baffled me. Like this guy is 6'5", 6'7".
Yeah, I don't know. He's a massive looking guy. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, like I don't care if there's lifts that he's wearing. I don't care if that Super Bowl commercial is
he's
real.
He's still jacked.
He is
beyond real. Yeah.
And the second thing is, where are the people? Where are any of the people in this whole movie? Like there's no one witness to all this on the train.
Fair. Yeah.
The assassin guy just walks away.
Yeah.
The cameras only track when they want to, but not in reality, where it's just like cameras would be all over the place and they'd be like, what is this little girl doing?
Yeah.
Jumping out of windows, landing on cars,
yeah,
and shooting people.
Yeah, and she's way more like stealth at the end of this movie. She's like a fully formed kind of assassin piece. Where was this early on?
Yeah,
you know, when we're doing all these other things, it doesn't make any sense that it lines up. They basically treat her like a whole new character when she, you know, peaks up at the end where she actually is her fully formed self, not the Momoa version or whatever.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. But I have to ask before we kind of put a bow on this, which is more unbelievable, this half-baked conspiracy or a Pittsburgh Pirates game that was that well attended?
Oof. Wow.
Yeah, I'm taking a shot at you, Pittsburgh.
Everything that was filmed in Pittsburgh was filmed proper. I look up information afterwards and I'm like, oh, this is the courthouse is actually across the street from the, I'm like, okay,
yeah,
great. Like what building is being worked on that still has water in the fountain?
Yeah,
like, when they drain that fountain.
Yeah, yeah, that would be the last thing that would happen. Why would you pay the water bill on an area under construction?
Well,
makes no sense.
I guess to see the water turn red.
Yeah.
I guess it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great look.
Mm.
The other thing that bothered me, and there's many different versions of this, the Russian doll version of the villain here, where it's loses so much focus because it's a constant shift in villain.
Yeah.
It's like you have the big pharma CEO.
Yep.
Then it's the hired gun that you think is hired by the CEO. Then it's another CEO after you killed the first CEO.
Yep.
And then it's back to the hired gun again, which you think was hired by the other CEO.
Yeah.
And then it gets into a political plot thing where it makes it the senator and a senator, mind you, that has the worst security detail I've ever seen, especially for one that has larger aspirations.
Yep.
Awful stuff. So to me, that is one of the biggest problems in here. It lacks focus. It lacks momentum. Yep. And especially it really, like I said, pulls the ripcord when it shifts from Momoa to Rachel. So you don't get this chase going on. Even the big kind of like fugitive moment where, you know, quote unquote, Rachel, Momoa, whoever you want to say, jumps into the river off the top of the stadium or whatever. Yeah. The FBI is closing in. Who cares? The FBI is not the people who made the momentum go with this. It's the assassin. It's the, you know, there should have been something that meant more for that rooftop scene, but there wasn't. And that's one of a litany of things wrong with this movie.
Yeah. Like, I was actually thrown off for a second when the FBI agent is just like, I've been talking to you this whole time. And I'm like, no, she hasn't. She's been talking to Rachel.
Right. Were you on speakerphone? Oh, like, she tried to hide it, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she borrowed $20 from her dead dad to get a burner phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
and by the way, yeah, and again, the whole bunny thing.
Oh, like, my God.
Can you see Momoa having this bunny that he's carrying around while he's just ripping dudes apart?
Oh, my God.
Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, man, of the five ones now listed, this is another stinker. So it makes me really kind of deflated for my action year that I thought was going to be so good. So, wow. And then the next movie we're going to talk about, Beckett. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't part of this, like, where I thought it was going to be on the tier of all these other things. But a lot of things still smack of what I kind of wanted from A Sweet Girl or these other things where it's like, okay, big star, John David Washington, a guy I like a lot, you know, and he can obviously do anything. Like, he'll do a big action blockbuster like Tenet, you know, he'll do these kind of like Oscar-y picks like Malcolm and Marie or Black Klansman. He can do anything he wants, but if the marketing was not great for these, it's a movie that, again, kind of a first go at it from a directing writing team. It's Ferdinando Cito Filamarino.
I was glad you tried that. Yeah.
Yeah. The story's by him as well. The reason why I'm clicking play on a movie like this is two reasons. One, John David Washington. And two, it looks like kind of those conspiracy thrillers that I do like. Like, you know, is this, you know, The Fugitive? Is it, you know, 3 Days at the Condor? Is it, you know, The Conversation or The French Connection? Is it these type of things?
Yeah.
Short answer, no. because it is a first script from Kevin A. Rice, and I believe it. Because it kind of shows in how this went. Even though, you know, like, Sweet Girl is number one right now on the Netflix top 10, so people are definitely watching these. And I noticed that it was even Beckett, for how little they promoted it, it felt like, was also in the Netflix top 10 the week it was out, and even still in the top 10 going into the weekend before Sweet Girl and other things kind of punched it out. So it's a movie that they acquired back in October of 2020. They didn't force it to try to get it out during, you know, kind of the height of the pandemic stuff. I'm glad that they retitled it, though, because did you know the original title of this, Chris?
Oh, God. About a murderer.
Born to be Murdered.
Born to be Murdered. Yeah.
Which, now that you've watched the movie, what?
Yeah.
why would it be called that?
Yeah.
It doesn't apply at all, unless there's, again, a plot that, you know, maybe could have served something, because plot here didn't work well at all. They retitled it Beckett back in January. Good move there.
Yeah.
It was the opening night film of the Locarno Film Festival back on August 4th, and then they obviously put it right straight to the platform 9 days later. The film is, the plot reads, while vacationing in Greece, American tourist Beckett, no need for a first name, John David Washington, becomes the target of a manhunt after a devastating accident. Forced to run for his life and desperate to get across the country to the American embassy to clear his name, tensions escalate as the authorities close in and political unrest. So, first of all, part of the other reasons why I was in on this movie, I like a lot of the people here. Boyd Holbrook, who plays the embassy agent. I don't know what his exact title would be. He's done a ton of Netflix work. You know, Narcos, We Could Be Heroes, In the Shadow of the Moon, which is not good, and he's the lead, so that was a tough one.
Yeah.
You know, I've liked him ever since Logan, Gone Girl. He's going to be in Indiana Jones 5 and The Sandman for Netflix, so, you know, he's a guy I like, but he doesn't pick the best projects. He's very much hit or miss. Vicky Krapes as Lena here from Phantom Thread, and I just saw her in Old, if you saw the M. Night Shyamalan film.
So that came trailer.
Out a little bit. Yeah. It is not good. I wanted it to be good. I'm an M. Night apologist for a lot of things.
Same.
And not good.
Damn it.
Alicia Vikander, who plays April here, the girlfriend in the beginning of the film. Yep. She, of course, from Ex Machina. Yep. I just saw her in The Green Knight, which you and I talked off air. I thought was not good. Not what you want. And she's also Lara Croft in Tomb Raider. She's done some work for Netflix with Earthquake Bird. So a lot of people that I do like, but definitely have some, you know, red on the ledger, you know, to kind of go, well, yeah, they're not slam dunks. And I was kind of saying to you off air with this film, there's a few things you want by the end of this movie.
Yep.
You want to know, you know, where is this conspiracy going? Does it make sense? Does it hold water? You want to know, does Beckett survive, and or does he get to see or bury his girlfriend? Yes, she dies. We'll get there in a minute. You know, because obviously they say devastating accident. You guys can put two and two together. Does the kidnapped boy that's part of this conspiracy thing survive and or get freed? And there's not much more here that you want. You just want kind of something that makes sense to go for the ride, to get a propulsion in this story. And I felt it really got maybe partial credit by the end of the film. What did you think?
It definitely gave me that 70s conspiracy man on the run feel, even down to the music.
Yeah, I actually thought the music was the best part. I thought it really sold that vibe that I was hoping for.
Oh, yeah. And I got to say, like, again, I watched the trailer before I was supposed to watch it, trying to determine if I was going to watch this or Sweet Girl first. And my wife leaned towards Sweet Girl and then realized her folly and pulled the ripcord. She was out. But with Beckett, I was just like, okay, again, another conspiracy going on. But I'm like, how does this involve him? They must have information, you know, for people to be chasing them as quickly as they are. And again, I'm like, really? Wrong time? That's essentially what got them into all this mess.
Yeah, wrong place, wrong time. He sees the kid in, you know, because the accident, for everybody who's seen, you obviously know, like, where he falls asleep at the wheel, goes off a cliff, goes into a house, survives, his girlfriend dies, she gets tossed out of the vehicle, but he sees a woman and this kind of redheaded kind of preteen kid, whatever, and, you know, mentions it to the cops, and then immediately they're like, oh crap, the jig is up, and then just needs to dispatch him. But they don't do it right away. They kind of let him go off to almost kill himself, and then go, yeah, now's a good time to shoot at him while he's trying to kill himself. Let him kill himself. Yeah, if they just let him kill himself, they'd be fine.
They didn't know he was trying to kill himself. He was just taking meds. I don't know.
Yeah.
Again, from the trailer, it looked like, is the girlfriend really dead? Is she not? Why do they have her hostage or whatever? You know, I thought maybe they were just like, oh, yeah, she's dead. You know, just because she didn't move for him didn't mean that she was dead on the spot.
Yeah, they definitely play into that by not showing her or the body or letting him see her.
Yeah.
So it kind of plays into, oh, is she actually alive and this is going to come into play later? Spoiler alert, no. It's just annoying.
But just like Sweet Girl, though, I'm going to be blunt when I say this. He's the only black guy in Greece.
Yeah, yes.
And you're having trouble trying to find him.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it'd be a lot easier. And why Greece? Why can't you put him in a place where everyone knows is, like, you know, political upheaval and you know,
well,
maybe
because,
not the best place for you to be right now. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing, because they're there on vacation. So it can't be someplace so bad.
Right. True.
That you wouldn't go there in the first place.
Right.
But then also could be understandable that something happens to where you need to, like, get out of town, out into the boonies, instead of staying in Athens or wherever the protests were taking place.
Like, with that little game that they play of, like, you know, who are these people that we see? It's like, oh, that guy in the jacket, you know, he's from, you know, this place and he's doing this thing. And, you know, where they're trying to make up these backstories to these strangers.
Right.
Like, you could have had them be witness to something. And be like, okay, all right, we see who it is, and then try and kill him. But it was something as dumb as you described the boy.
Right.
You know, who the hell is going to believe this American, and who's he going to go to? He's just telling the cops.
Plus, he's trying to leave the country.
Yeah.
Help him leave the country. You don't have to kill him.
Nope.
Because again, what's he going to do? Going to go home and see the news that this kid is kidnapped and put two and two together, and he's going to, what, contact who?
Yeah.
Like, who's he going to tell? He's going to go to D.C. and be like, I know where this kid is?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how, especially a grieving guy who's going to be, like, going through the burying process and the grieving process and having to deal with her parents and all these things that, like, he clearly doesn't want to say because he feels horrible.
Yeah.
It's his fault and all these other things. He's not going to give a crap about some kid that he half remembered was in this house.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a real quick question.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is a movie that, you know, the conspiracy has to make some semblance of sense, and it needs to kind of feel like there's an imminent threat or that it's worth the effort of this film.
Right.
At the end of the movie, I was kind of like, I don't really know what this, outside of the kidnapping, which kidnapping always makes sense.
That's it. Yeah.
But I don't get the political nature. Because they kept going like, oh, they're claiming it's this, you know, far right people who are upset, but really it might be the left. We don't know. And then it's like, and then they don't really explain it. They just kind of go, we kidnapped the guy who's going to be speaking at this rally's son. But I didn't really get what they were trying to do as like a message. Was it a smoke screen to kill him and get him out? I don't get any of that.
Nope.
And the fact, and this woman who they never say who she actually is that had the child.
Yep.
At least we knew who the police guy was. Like, there's nothing here.
No.
There's nothing for me to latch on to. And Beckett, you just, again, wrong place, wrong time. So he's not like uncovering things. He's not deeply involved. He's just kind of like, I saw something. They're trying to kill me. Can you help me get out of this country and not get killed? That's really all we can grab onto. I don't get it. I don't get why they thought this was enough here. It's relatively pointless at the end of the day.
Pretty much.
And also, like, one main sticking point I saw in a lot of critical reviews was how insanely lucky he is and or how much abuse he could take and still keep going along.
Oh, my God, right?
He gets shot, like, multiple times.
Yep.
He gets, you know,
stabbed, sliced.
Stabbed, right. Like, he has a broken arm from the, like, the accident alone should take him out of 90% of what's going on. But I guess the adrenaline of running for your life and all these things, you could buy some of it. But then, like, the lucky part comes in where it's like, so he runs into the beekeeper people.
Yeah.
To get a semblance of where to go and what to do, to get a phone, to call an embassy and do all these things. Which, by the way, okay.
Yeah.
You, just calling up an embassy, you can kind of get this solved. That's interesting.
I did like the fact that the embassy, who he was talking to over the embassy, was just like, you have to turn yourself in to the authorities. He's like, no, I'm getting chased by the authorities.
Right, yeah.
He's like, no, sense. This is really the smart thing to do.
Yeah, he's like, there's other cops. Okay.
Yeah.
But then, so on his, he's walking to Athens.
Yep.
Where he's like, yep, I'll figure it out. No big deal.
That
so he
valley
gets
by the river over there.
Yeah. No problem.
Yep.
Completely foreign country, not a major city where he currently is to get to the major city. I'm sure it's completely easy. I couldn't do that in Connecticut where I am and we are, like, let alone trying to do this in a foreign country. But so he finds a bus crew by the river, the one river, and then he takes the bus into the area where he immediately finds two women putting up flyers of the kidnapped boy that he happened to see to put it together. And then also having enough Greek currency still in his pockets after being in a car accident, hospitalization, a fight on the train, running for his life, sleeping and hiding in cars, and this guy still has enough money. He has money in his pockets.
Yeah.
Who the fuck? How the hell did that happen? And then, of course, at the end of the whole thing, when he jumps from multiple stories up in a parking garage onto a moving car to time that is completely not happening. And then that was after he was shot through and through in the stomach. So he lands on a car on the windshield with the stomach that just got shot, and then also has enough to fight that person.
Yeah.
And survive and, you know, make it this heroic effort.
So it's great, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the thing. It's better than Sweet Girl.
It is. Like, you know what? Yeah, slightly. Let's not, you know, go crazy with that one.
Yeah. But, and the scores kind of bear out too, where, you know, it's got a 5.6 versus a 5.5 on IMDb. 52 Metascore versus I think it was like 46, and yeah, so we're literally splitting hairs here, but yeah. You know, 48% tomato meter, 33% audience score, 2.8 on Letterboxd versus I think it was like 2.4 on the other one.
Yeah.
So again, in the same ballpark, slightly better, but it's another one where, you know, it the conspiracy doesn't do enough, the villains ish don't make a lot of sense. It's just a lot of people trying to kill him for not a lot of reasons that we fully understand.
Yeah. I'm glad I watched Sweet Girl first.
To feel better about Beckett after.
Yeah, feel a little better. Now, I don't know how it would be if I watched it the other way around, but with Beckett, I was just like, I like John David Washington, but I don't believe him and Alicia are, you know, real couple.
Right.
On screen.
Yeah.
And it was short. It's like, you know, we're not even that invested in them.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh man, that's a bum deal about him losing his girlfriend. I guess, you know, he has to go home now.
Yeah.
No, he's distraught. He's going to kill himself. Nope. They're going to stop him from doing that. And, you know, let's propel this movie forward.
Vicky Krieps, I liked. I thought that whole thing with the two women picking him up and them being more politically motivated, I was like, all right. This is where we're going to get the explanation of what the hell's going on. Yep. They're going to be an integral part. Nope.
Nope. The praying hands. Leaves them. That's it.
Right. Yeah. They really just, give him a reasonable direction of where to go once he's, you know, on his own and on the run again while he's in Athens and the embassy thing doesn't follow through or whatever, and it becomes a bigger deal. Like, none of that works at all. And if they flushed her out, let alone her and the other person, but like, if they flushed that out, I think a lot of things could have been saved and some momentum could have been established. But even there, she's like there at the end. It means nothing.
Yeah, that's it. To console him, where he finally, you know, gets that sense of relief. Like, I did it. I saved the day. It wasn't all for nothing. I should have died.
Right. So to bottom line this for everybody, if you watch the whole film, a guy who fell asleep at the wheel and killed his girlfriend is on the run after he almost kills himself because he witnessed something he shouldn't, wrong place, wrong time. And the movie ends with him surviving his attackers to be in the arms of a woman that has nothing to do with him, and we never see his girlfriend ever again after the accident, not even in a, hey, I made it back to the States to bury her, or any kind of like satisfying conclusion. The boy survives. Okay. I wasn't that invested because I didn't know who he was or what this whole thing was going on for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. That to me is a first draft of a script that got shot.
Yeah.
You know, I try to be more kind, but I don't know. Like I said, man, I'm all fired up from like basically listing all these movies that I'm like, where was my spring and summer actioners that like all year that sizzle reel got me fired up. This is gonna be a hell of a year. Netflix is in a good position, you know. They're the streamer at the head of all this. And, you know, they don't have any issues. They have ton of product.
Yeah.
Let's go. Look at all this. Look at all this is coming out.
Yep.
A lot of stars. Not a lot of great product, though, at least from the action side. And these two didn't do it for me either. So it's a tough pill. And like I said, Kate in a couple weeks better be damn good.
Yeah. Cross our fingers.
Yeah. But thank you so much for riding through this one with me, man. I appreciate it. You know, putting you to the test, I guess, of our friendship, maybe, where I keep dialing up these iffy to bad movies.
But I get to say, I get to put another stamp in my passport. I'm in Greece.
That's okay? True. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. That's true. I totally did not put that together. Thank you for keeping up with the important stuff that we do around here.
Yep,
you are our Netflix foreign ambassador, and you get to, stamp another one. That is awesome.
Yep.
I am so happy for you. At least something good comes out of this.
Of course.
Another good thing is you get to tell the people that since you were last on, you started up the website.
I did start up a website. I am completely inept in keeping it together, but
all are at first, man.
It's a focal point for my writing, my ideas, my thoughts, and if the internet is kind to me, sometimes people will get to read them.
Yeah. You know? Hey, there you go. You got anything new up there? I know you had you've been having some issues trying to get certain things up, but are anything, movie reviews for 2021 stuff that maybe you put through?
So I have a couple things in the docket. I'm trying to salvage a podcast that I had with our friend Shane at Media Mosh. We had reviewed the Suicide Squad, and we lost both recordings.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to salvage that and put it into written form, but in an entertaining way where you feel like you're listening to us.
Yeah, sure.
But
I've seen
reading.
Those. That works.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing was I had seen, I finally watched Bo Burnham's Inside. I'm not giving away too much, but fantastic. Really, it's a must watch, I think.
Yeah, it definitely got amazing reviews across the board. That was a big hit for Netflix. They even put that in theaters for a day
or
a weekend or something, just to make like a big event thing for him because it did so well for them. So kudos to him. I'm not the biggest Bo Burnham fan as far as his comedy and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I am slow to get to it, but, you know, definitely it's one of those things that's on my list.
Yeah.
I know as a Netflix person, maybe I should be more apt to give it a shot because it is. But, I just haven't gotten there yet. But good to know that you also feel that it's right in the ballpark there. So I will check that out.
I will say you don't necessarily have to be a fan of his stand-up, but I find a lot of talent in what he did with this and some similarities of trying to put out your craft, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So I have that coming up. So
yeah, especially during all this,
exactly.
Where, you know, the pandemic stuff, doing a lot of Zoom things and it's tough. And obviously,
I was going to say he makes even you, Andrew, look lazy. Okay. So, and we know
that's
how
not
hard
too
you
hard.
No.
Yeah.
No, you're a hardworking man.
I appreciate it, man. Well, you know, you are too, man. I'm glad to see that the website finally has come to fruition.
Appreciate
and, it. And, you know, everybody needs to check it out. Give them the URL, buddy. Do the whole thing. Do the plug.
That's another difficulty thing. I thought it was as simple as arguingwithmyself.com with hyphens in between the words, but it's through WordPress. So I don't know if it's wordpress.arguingwithmyself.com. Either way, go to my Facebook page. You can find me there. You can find links to my other sites, my Twitter, my Instagram. You can find me doing it all, sometimes well, but you can find me on those platforms. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Everybody needs to check that out. Check out all of Chris's past articles, reviews, trivia stuff on all over the place for us film buffs. There's so many things to enjoy, and I'm glad you have one stop shopping for everybody to go to. So
excellent.
That's awesome, man. Proud of you for that. And I appreciate you coming on, man. I hope that we have some more good action stuff that'll get this taste out of my mouth coming up.
We can only hope.
Yeah. Love you, buddy. Good to see
you. Love you too.